You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. I cannot believe it's been 3 weeks, 4 weeks since we've done an HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. With me, live and in person, is Trish McFarland. How are you, Trish?
I'm good. Nice to be in person. We haven't done a live recording in a while, right? Probably in the fall.
It has been a while, but it's fantastic to do an HR Happy Hour Show, to pre-record an HR Happy Hour Show. This is HR Happy Hour number 176. It's got two working titles right now. And I'll pick the one we like the best when we post it. It's either going to be called Big Bets for HR.
I like it.
Or the HR Moonshot.
Okay.
I like that one, too.
You like that one, too.
So it's all about big ideas, big themes, some technology themes. We're recording this show live from Oracle HCM World in Las Vegas. It's February 6, 2014. It's a Thursday. And we're live on site. It's been a great event so far. I've been really pleased with being a part of the event. I got to do a panel this morning with some great folks from Accenture and Credit Suisse and Constellation Consulting, and that was a lot of fun.
It was an interesting panel.
I
liked your spin on that. I mean, I think we see lots of panels at events, and what I really liked was that you seemed to draw out the individual characters of each of the panelists, which sometimes you don't get that. It seems a little more formal. So it was
well,
nice
good.
To have the mix of the information.
I'm glad you thought it was a good panel. I had fun doing it. So we'll circle back on some of the Oracle HCM stuff as well, and there's some folks we absolutely have to thank before we're done with the podcast. But quick announcements. My thing, HR Technology Conference, for anybody who catches this and is interested, and I know some people probably are, I am digging into proposals for speaking. There's ridiculous number of them, 50, maybe 70% more than last year. So I'm digging through them, working on the agenda. Some fantastic stuff's come in, and folks who are interested in that can look for updates from me on that very soon. And we're putting together the agenda for HR Tech, and it's going to be a great show. So, Trish, you wanted to give us an HR Evolution update?
Right. So HR Evolution, as people know, has partnered with HR Tech for several years, and really that was due to the need to have some logistical assistance, but with the planner scheduled, we've determined that we probably need to go ahead for 2014, move it a little bit later in the year, so just tentatively so people can mark their calendars. We're looking at maybe the first or second weekend in November. That'll give us some planning time, and also for anyone who's been to one of the past events, when we started this 5 years ago, it was really more for the people, by the people, and so we're going to go back to that mode a little bit. And so people can start right now. If you check us on Facebook or on our site, you can contribute ideas of where you'd like us to hold the event, what city, if you're willing to help, and we would appreciate any of that.
Cool.
But mark your calendars for the end of the year.
Consider it marked.
You're marked. You're
awesome.
In.
Any last survey you're working on? You want to mention that?
Oh, that's right. So been with Brandon Hall Group now for almost a month and starting to really get into some of the research side of my job, which is really fascinating. I'm working on an HR system survey, which will be out probably later in February. So more to come on that, but stay tuned because I'm going to need lots of HR practitioners and leaders to weigh in on their current HR systems and future. So
awesome. Cool. We'll look for that. We'll be sure to share that out as well. So, hey, we're at Oracle HCM World in Las Vegas, and we have with us today as our guest one of the Oracle HCM thought leaders, one of the did the opening co-keynote presentation to open up the show the other day, which was fantastic, Bertrand Dussert. Bertrand, let me get your title correctly, the Vice President HCM Transformation at Oracle. Bertrand, welcome to the HR Happy Hour
Show. Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Bertrand, tell us about yourself a little bit before we get into the conversation.
Sure. So I'm a former practitioner, definitely still practitioner at heart. I was the prior to joining Oracle about a couple years ago, was the global head of HR service delivery for American Express. So remit included things like recruitment strategy, workforce planning, but also the whole employee experience, whether it's online or in person servicing, live servicing, if you will. So service delivery, that whole aspect of HR at American Express, and prior to that, similar role at UBS Investment Bank.
Okay.
So spent a number of years in practitioner
high
side.
Finance guy.
It's fun. Yeah, I spent a little time on Wall Street. I had kind of a front row seat to the craziness in the late 2000s. But
were you one of the barbarians at the gate?
Yeah, I think that explains the hair loss right. You know, on my part. Right. But good to be here.
Yeah. Hey, Bertrand, it's great to and Iron Man.
I think multiple errors in judgment demonstrated there. I keep signing up for these things, but it's good stuff.
That's one of those things you look at and say, man, I'd really love to do that, and then you think, I have to swim how far? Like, I do a little bit of jogging, I try, I can ride a bike, right? But the swimming part to me is just so daunting. Yeah, I mean, I can swim.
It's 2.4 miles with 3,000 people that are hitting each other for the first 20 minutes.
I know,
but, it's good stuff.
I feel like swimming is more of a survival thing, not a fun thing. Like, if the boat goes down.
It kind of is. It stretches you slightly outside of your comfort zone, at least for me, and it's part of why I do it. It's fun.
Great.
To kind of
super. Well, great to, thanks for taking some time out.
Yeah, sure.
HCM World.
Happy to do it. Great to be here.
Before we get into some of the meaty stuff, I have a question. You had a fun run here.
I did.
HCM World. How did that go? Did you have a good turnout?
Yeah, that was good. You know, we had about 20 people that came out, which was great. It was big enough that, you know, we had some great conversations. We had some customers come out. We had some Oracle employees. We even had a former pro triathlete come out.
Nice.
So I thought, you know, I was going to have an easy run, and then she delicately mentions that she was a pro on the U.S. national team before
so
ringer. I was a little more insecure than I expected, but it was good. It was great conversation, and
that was a great idea to add
fun.
That on. Yeah.
And we hope
together
in
a different way.
We hope to keep doing that. You know, as we have more of these shows that we grow it over time.
There's been a lot of really cool ideas at this show too. The fun runs one,
right.
the fitness tracking contest is another fantastic idea, which I'm totally going to steal for HR.
Yeah, the Fitbit thing is is great, and I'm way too low on the league tables on the Fitbit because you've been in a lot of back-to-backs, but for HR Tech, if you have that kind of conference, I will be running at night just to make sure I'm on the league table.
My friends at Oracle who are going to listen to this, who do I need to talk to make that happen at HR Tech? I tweeted it out. I'm saying it on this podcast too. I want that at
I've
HR
heard
Tech.
Of people trying to shake their Fitbit to get more.
Right. Yeah, and then you have competition because you have vendors on the league table. Yeah, that's
all right, Clay. So let's talk about some of the topics we wanted to hit on today quickly on the podcast. Bertrand, you gave a great opening keynote presentation with Kara Capretta the other day. Some interesting themes from not only your talk, but some of the other Chris Leone's presentation this morning as well. Some of the stuff David Roth did, just fascinating presentations. So we wanted to hit a couple of topics, and the first thing, which is near and dear to my heart, we wanted to sort of hit more at a high level, maybe more conceptual level, just some of these big changes, these big technology trends that are sort of impacting not just work or HR just yet, but overall kind of society, if that even makes sense. Things like the exponential growth of data, increased connectivity, machines connecting to another, automation, all the things. I'd love for you maybe just to give your thoughts. You love this topic.
Oh, I do love this stuff.
Maybe just share your thoughts about what are some of these really interesting things to you, and then maybe talk a little bit about how they might play out or manifest in work and workplaces.
Sure. So, you know, just to kind of calibrate at a very high level, you know, when you think of data, 90% of all data on the face of the earth was created in the last 2 years. I mean, when you look at that, and we're forecasting by 2020 about a 50x, when we think about a 50x increase in that volume. And all that is happening at the same time as the sort of Moore's Law continues to apply. So the ability to process that data, to not be overwhelmed by it and actually just, you know, derive some insights from it, it creates a really interesting opportunity. And when you think of where that data comes from, you know, some of it is machine to machine, like you mentioned, the Internet of Things. But a lot of it is also this trend towards the quantified self. You know, we're just starting to sort of instrument, you know, the human being.
Right.
And as an HR leader, I'd want to think about how do human beings within my organization create value? How do they connect with customers, with each other? And, you know, how is that process instrumented today? And how is it going to get even more sort of instrumented and data rich, you know, moving forward? What kind of insights can I get from that data richness? And, you know, the things, levers I can pull just to create sort of a, you know, a more efficient and more effective set of customer relationships and value creation from broader employee base. Because it is, you know, 55 to 70% of costs in most organizations is people.
Are you finding that the HR leaders seem ready to embrace this new idea of the data? Because having been a practitioner my career, I know that's always been, to some of my peers, very scary. Are you finding that there's still some hesitancy, or are they really starting to come around now, a couple years into it?
Yeah, you know, there's a fair bit of variability. I mean, I have what I think is one of the funnest jobs that I could ever have. I get to spend my time traveling and meeting with a lot of these HR leadership teams. So I meet with two or three a week, roughly, and it varies. You know, I find at the CHRO level, and most of the organizations I work with are like sort of the biggest customers we have, so they're large, you know, complex organizations. The chief human resource officers get it. You know, they're very bright. They've got huge context. They understand, like, how their business creates value. They're not HR people first, they're business leaders and top senior executives first that happen to lead HR, you know, and so they get it. Where they struggle a little bit is, where do we start sort of that the one level below, you know, how do I look at my HR leadership team, who's going to take the lead, you know, in thought leadership, and then in also driving, turning that into, well, what does it mean for me? So I think they get it. There is a little bit of anxiety there. There is also, I mean, you know, it's funny you mentioned scary. I wrote a piece recently that was called, you know, HR should hire scary people.
Right.
And scary data people. And I think it's because it is a different. You know, a lot of HR practitioners grew up knowing that they were the stewards of corporate culture. Mm-hmm. That requires a lot of well-tuned intuition to be able to do the job correctly. And intuition is not a bad thing. It's just something to be paired up with data, you know, combine and create value. And so there's definitely an opportunity to get more comfortable with it, and a desire and a recognition that there's a skill gap on the part of some of the team, or you know, not every organization has a champion. I think that's the thing.
Yeah, I think you could argue that gap, or that potential gap, that skills gap, or that sort of familiarity gap with these kinds of concepts, that's not just an HR problem.
No, it's not.
I think we see that in other areas of the organization as well, right?
Yeah, that's totally
so
true.
So it presents a broader talent management problem as well.
Yeah, we've seen finance and procurement, et cetera. So what has happened, though, what I've observed anecdotally, is that some of these other functions have sort of, they've dived right in with less hesitation than in HR because they've got less compliance concerns. So if you think of, you know, global sourcing or procurement, that's a group where they've said, you know, we've got to get underneath this spend data and cut it 20 different ways. And when you start to apply that to HR, and some organizations have said, well, why can't we do all this big data mining we just did in procurement and apply it to another large spend category, which is people, immediately you've got all these compliance concerns that start to throw up walls. So it's a little, you know, there is a little more hesitation, but the good news is these other functions, having taken some of these steps and getting a little bit of a head start, there is a bit of a roadmap in terms of how you think about this.
And there's a big difference as well, right? Because something like, I used to make a joke, and they'll try to frame it this way, because it was a joke I used to make about this podcast way back when we were, you know, started doing this 5 years ago now, right? The HR Happy Hour podcast. I used to joke that, you know, there's no such thing as the supply chain happy hour podcast.
Right.
Like, it doesn't exist, right?
Cause, right.
Because I'm not saying that's an easy job, managing a global supply chain or resource procurement, all those things. But, yeah, you can apply data to it. You can apply algorithms. It seems very, like the data will speak to you in the right way. And I was talking with someone here earlier today, and we were talking about a topic I want to get into next is predictive analytics.
Sure.
And we were talking about this idea that if you could develop this system, or you had a system that sort of suggested that, you know, you had two accountants in the organization, and the data suggested that, you know, for various reasons, maybe say a compensation, right? Both the accountants were likely to be retention risks. And so the system tells you, well, give them both a raise, and they're less likely to leave. But one would leave and one doesn't leave because they're just different, and they have different motivations, they have different personal circumstances, and so the formulas maybe can't predict that right just yet. So I guess what I'm saying is people are more complicated than sort of supply chains.
They are, yeah. And I think, too, you know, just, again, being kind of out in the workspace, you hear HR leaders sometimes saying they really don't want to necessarily apply data to people in that way, too. So there is some hesitancy I've heard there. Not as much, but that is still residual. It's like, these are people. We don't, you know, so it's how do you educate those leaders and get them on board with, no, this data will actually help you do that. It is very personal instead of it being, the supply chain.
And, you know, on the uncertainty front, I mean, I think that's a great point. I look at it at, I'm actually a big Nate Silver fan. I don't know if you're familiar with sort of, you know, this concept that any prediction in almost any realm has an uncertainty to it. And any prediction that doesn't have an uncertainty variable sort of assigned to it or disclosed is questionable in my mind. And so with human beings, like a lot of other areas, like, you know, weather forecasting or whatever it is,
stock market.
Yeah, again, I spent some time on Wall Street, as you mentioned, and that's an area I also love to look at sort of leading indicators in other areas where prediction models have been applied, and algorithmic trading is an area that's probably been at it for a while. The market's very unpredictable. People are very unpredictable. And I think one of the biggest obstacles I see in HR leadership teams is they're stuck in the concept of data is black and white. It's structured, and it's sort of pass-fail. You know, is this person an employee or not? Did we pay them right or not? And you get in a lot of senior leadership team meetings and HR discussions where someone shares data, and someone else in the room says, well, your data doesn't match my data. And that's been an issue in a lot of organizations, right, all the time. So then you come in with a predictive algorithm that says, you know, we feel like there might be a retention risk or an engagement issue in this pocket of your business. Mm-hmm. And then everybody around the table says, you can't even give me a consistent count of my people. How can you tell me that's an issue? So what I would encourage sort of HR leadership teams to think about is, differentiate between data that has to be black and white because it's regulatory, because it has transactions tied to it, and data that is inherently never going to be black and white.
Right.
Never
mm-hmm.
is a big word, but you know, predictive science is, if you get something that's ever 100% predictive on people, that I think it'll be a while. Maybe not in my lifetime. But you know, get comfortable with this notion there's two realms of data and talk about it differently. You know, frame up conversations around, well, you know, we've run predictive algorithms around the workforce of an acquisition we're just in the process of making, and we're concerned there's going to be a sort of a heat map, you know, issue of turnover risk in three different areas. Let's focus some of our attention there.
Right.
Because we're all too busy to focus our attention equally everywhere, so let's just kind of start there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where it makes a lot more sense.
Well, yeah. The C-suite buys into that more, too, like you said.
Right.
I mean, I think because there's plenty of people
right, because
in that
they have
other
their
category
right.
where you've been
right.
shut down, and then you're just sitting there like, oh, now what do I say?
Right.
If and you're going off more of these gray areas, it is you're able to keep that going.
Right, and most senior executives in a lot of these other areas are comfortable with the notion of you don't eliminate risk, you manage risk. Right. And you just
right.
you have to disclose risk, understand risk, manage it, price it. You know, in a lot of industries, you're pricing risk and managing those economics. But in HR functions, that hasn't been sort of core to
right.
the discussion or even our vocabulary.
Right.
Yeah,
because
it's been
eliminate risk.
Eliminate all costs.
Yeah, eliminate compliance risk.
Right. You know,
well, and I think, too, to be fair, I mean, it could depend on the size of your organization as to how much this applies or not. But I think, too, part, you know, there's so much of the HR job that is so black and white, and it's all the compliance and all those things you have to do. It's sometimes hard to switch gears multiple times a day over to that more strategic view and get into the mitigating risk versus no, you cannot do this.
Right.
So that I think the individual that you have in that top role especially has to be able to balance that and flip-flop back and forth a little bit.
And distinguish.
Some people really have trouble with that.
It's
you really have to mentally get in that space before you can do that.
Well, that's what I hear a lot from CHROs who sort of sit through a brainstorm around analytics mm-hmm. and then they say, well, where do I start? You know, where do I find that person that can do this? And what I tell them is, it may or may not be the people information group that you have in place
right.
where you find this. You may just bring an IO psychologist who had an econometrics minor,
yeah.
who's a data geek, who just loves to drill down. And to your point, you know, I think it's important to just clearly distinguish. We're in the realm of pass-fail, or we're in the realm
right.
of predictive sciences, prescriptive recommendations,
yep.
and let's make sure we're clear that there's an uncertainty there and we're comfortable with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Let's do a quick reset. This is Steve Bowes with Trish McFarland, of course, with Bertrand Dusserre from Oracle. VP HCM Transformation, live from Oracle HCM World, recording live.
Live Absolutely. From Las Vegas.
We'll not play back live. We'll play this back next week, Monday or Tuesday, hopefully. But live, boy, cloudy
that
today.
Good.
Not sunny in Las Vegas today. I noticed, by the way.
I looked outside for like 2 seconds.
I did look out the window.
Have you been outside?
I did. I went outside for five minutes. You did your fun run.
I did
the
fun
right?
run Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I'm kind of big time. I had a photo shoot out by the pool. So.
Oh, wow.
A new headshot.
I don't know anything.
Got to take advantage of it.
I don't know anything about that. So, hey, we've talked around predictive a little bit, but I want to hit it one more time just because I'm getting a ton of proposals for HR tech in and around the predictive analytics space. A lot of them in the hiring realm, certainly, where maybe like all kinds of human resources and workplace technologies, the recruiting, that talent assessment acquisition stuff has always led the way because it just seems like it always has.
Yep.
But
well, HR is more comfortable with that.
I'm getting some fascinating proposals coming in, certainly. It's a big issue. It's going to be a big issue, certainly, at our show. Bertrand, you know, I know you think about it a lot and you talk to leaders about it a lot. So what do you see the one or two or maybe even three areas where you really think predictive analytics will make sort of the soonest impact to organizations and to HR departments?
Right. So, yeah, I think there's a couple areas. One is there's fairly well-established models to predict things like turnover and performance.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of generation one of that where models allow you to scenario that at the level of a small team or sort of change some things around with scenario modeling and say, what if I promote an employee A versus employee B,
right.
and what does that do to employee B's likelihood of staying, et cetera. You know, the next phase, the next area where we're seeing lots of potential is around what we call sort of workforce modeling.
Okay.
This concept that, you know, maybe you're making a big organizational change or you've acquired a company and looking to roll them in. And, you know, how do you sort of lay that out? And people have historically done that on spreadsheets or they've sort of, you know, laid it out. And then once they figured, you know, they got best case, somebody went ahead and sort of, you know, transacted lots of transactions to implement it. There are tools available now that allow you to model that sort of in real time and understand, you know, for example, if I put this one individual who's compensated a little bit more than the peers that it would be on this team when that individual arrives,
mm-hmm.
and then reports to a manager who's had a 2 rating for the last 3 years and hasn't changed roles,
right.
what's the likelihood of that person's being engaged and staying?
Right.
So that's, you know, an exciting area. And then the other one, like you mentioned, is selection. You
yeah.
know, and selection's actually been leveraging, you know, predictive analytics for some time, and what we're seeing a shift towards is using more big data and
mm-hmm.
using sort of large data sets of assessments. So initially, Some of the most effective assessments took business outcomes, and we've done this in sort of in the past with teams that I led, taking clear, defined business outcomes. If you have a quantifiable work environment, such as a service center, where you know sort of
right.
average call handle time, you can measure it in real time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you say, well, what links back to actually designing an assessment that does predict, you know, performance? And you can actually chart it and look at what the correlation looks like and test it and, you know, to retest it. What we're seeing now, that's sort of without big data. What we're seeing now is many companies have done this sort of across the world.
Right.
And so you have folks like a corporate executive board who, you know, are presented here, mm-hmm. have a, you know, assessment company, SHL, and they've done over 1 million assessments of various kinds, a test for innovation, a test for
right.
across the globe. So they can start to give you something like a matrix that says, if I'm in a workforce planning function and I'm trying to figure out where do we open our next R&D center, where is there the best availability of innovative talent and the best context for innovation? And based on an agreed upon definition of innovation. So you start to layer in a lot more science and data-based decisioning around workforce planning, which is an area that's been difficult to do historically, like location science, because in the United States we've got great government data
right.
in many cases, but that's not consistently reported across the world. So we're seeing continued evolution of selection tools of all kinds, even video interviewing, for example, was something that initially was I think developed as a sort of a work savings approach.
Yeah, and cost too.
Cost
don't
and work,
fly
and logistics,
from point
right,
A
to make
point
it easier.
Yep.
But I think we're increasingly finding, people are saying, if we're recording large sets of these interviews, there's probably behavioral traits.
Oh,
in
yeah, I tell you what.
So
that's
I won't go to the Sophie robot.
Yeah, I was going there. The interviewing robot.
Yeah.
I know I wrote about it.
Please
tell the robot where you see yourself in 5 years.
Yeah, that's when the lawyers keep knock on the door very quickly, but I think it's a space to watch, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a call with a guy, one of these assessment kind of players, and they've been around for a while, too. And they've worked so well at the high end, and he's telling me this story. He wouldn't tell me who the company was, some retail company, though, doing a lot of seasonal hiring
sure.
for the holidays, high volume, high location. And he said they got to the one point where there's a couple of locations that they don't even interview anymore. They offer jobs to the, nth percentile of people who perform on the assessment that they're testing for.
Right.
Who meets the knockout
sure,
criteria?
Sure,
like,
sure.
You're not on parole or a felon. Or
yeah, right, sure. The background verification.
Sure. Right. But other than that, I said, because I can't, the quote from the person who runs the store or whatever it is, said, I can't really add any more value beyond what this assessment's doing to make it worth my time.
Right.
Take me off the floor,
right.
helping
right.
customers and managing the people here. So I think it's...
Well, that's an area where, we touched earlier on the quantified self and the datafication of people. That's an area where the more data-rich the environment you work in, and, I'm not sure retail is the most data-rich, but it's pretty data-rich. You can track sales and activities and the
mm-hmm.
kinds of transactions that you support. The more data-rich the work, the more opportunities there are to redefine how you manage performance, beyond the 1-2-3 rating, and tying that back to real prediction and selection, right? Because then you can tell, okay, how do I define a top performer? And there's really 3 or 4 metrics that are
right.
highly measurable, highly quantifiable. I can tie it back. So I'm not surprised that I would expect more traction in large jobs that have high multiple incumbency, lots of people in the same role,
right.
lots of data, and the ability to tie back sort of outcomes to screening, if that makes sense.
Well,
yeah.
I think people in general are more willing to share now. It's more comfortable. It's feeling like second nature, whereas 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you would not have done that. You wouldn't
right.
share anything personal, and now many people are getting comfortable with that, and I think that just translates into the workplace.
Yeah, it does. And I think as we heard some of the speakers, including, sort of our leadership mention over the last 2 days, the barriers of the inside world and the outside
mm-hmm.
world are sort of falling apart, so
mm-hmm.
or disappearing. So you can't have sort of one reality externally and one reality internally. So, the transparency is...
Oh, yeah, and there's technology now that's coming that basically says, and I think I've seen it more in the sales context, where it's like,
mm-hmm.
all right, let me examine this person's public, all their tweets
right.
for the last 3 years, and I'll tell you what kind of person they are and how you might approach them in a sales context.
Right.
A direct call.
Well,
on one hand,
that's scary to me, but then on the other hand, I just made this comment not too long ago on Facebook. Facebook ads have been around for a while, and I would get ads for all sorts of odd things. It's right on the money now. It is
right. It's improved.
I can't even tell you how many I click on and how many I bought things from.
You're the one. You're that person.
I'm
yeah,
that
yeah,
person.
Yeah.
No,
we met them.
I am.
We met the person who clicked on the Facebook ad.
I've always wondered who clicked on the ad, but that's great.
Because,
well, thanks for making
but,
them better.
But
it
finally started. Instead of me, I've got 10-year-old twins. Instead of getting the diaper ads and the new mom stuff, Facebook finally figured it out, and they're sending me stuff that's totally appropriate for, you know, sending meals to my home, things that are going
to
save the
I'm trying to throw
time,
Facebook off the trail, but I'm going to say this on the podcast, and we're going to hear our last topic, but I'm going to say it, and I hope nobody steals it, but I said it publicly, and we all hear me, and my idea first, right?
Okay.
So here's my idea. It's an app called Alibi. So here's how it works. So if you were supposed to be, like, if you were supposed to be at Oracle HCM World today, doing an interview,
I already know where this is going. Right?
But,
I can predict where this is going.
So that's what you're supposed to be doing. Right?
We don't need technology.
That's what you were supposed to be. That's what you told your boss you'd be today, right? Doing interviews here and podcast.
Right.
And instead, you wanted to go to the casino. You wanted to go fly to the Grand Canyon. You wanted to whatever hijinks. Whatever. The Alibi creates like a whole series of social media exhaust to prove that you were here at HCM World doing the interviews.
Checking
predefined times. Great interview with Stephen Trish at your class.
Sure.
You know, checking pictures, superimpose your picture in front of the
No, you got the full experience.
Yeah,
great.
So that's
Alibi.
The idea. It's called Alibi.
No,
and if you see this on your phone, somebody stole it from you. All right. I'm sorry for the diversion. But hey, the last thing we wanted to hit, Bertrand, which I love from your talk, and again, it's one of the themes I'm getting in my HR Tech Conference stuff, is talent as the customer, which is a kind of another way of looking at HR and marketing and sort of the functions kind of crossing, blending, and supporting and or kind of, I don't know, coexisting with each other in maybe different ways. I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit from your perspective.
Sure. So it's basically taking the lessons of consumer marketing, particularly business to consumer digital marketing. And, you know, Trisha gave the great example of you're actually clicking on more of the ads now because they're targeted, they're relevant, they know you. And so it's applying some of that same science and approach to talent, you know. And let me give sort of a such as or use case. Employer referral programs. You know, how many of us have been in a large organization where there's an employer referral program, it gets rolled out, we get lots of email, because none of us have enough email, announcing the new employer referral program and the new award level. And the first thing you think is, I don't have time, it's not relevant to me, I'm getting jobs, you know, that we're hiring for that I don't know anyone for, so I'm going to start to tune it out. But you can take a program like that and make it much more targeted. If you can start to understand the social reach and where the social reach of your workforce, how it's mapped out, if you know that, you know, Steve, you've got a great network and a social media community, and we're looking for a social media marketing guru, we forward just that one job to you as an employee, and all of a sudden, you're out there, you know, you're like, as soon as you get that, you're like, this is relevant, I'm interested, I understand it, I know 10 people who could do this job, right? And all of a sudden, it feels like it's relevant to me, it's targeted, et cetera. So it's the same experience we expect as consumers. Not only are we shifting from user interfaces and technology where you have to be trained on it to user interfaces that are mobile enabled that don't require training.
Absolutely.
That should be like an iPad and an iPhone kind of thing. But we're going sort of beyond that to you know me. It's relevant to me. You have context.
Yeah.
You've done the work. It's just like a well-known, obviously, online retailer that, you know, seems to always make great suggestions to me, much to my wife's dismay, and I keep clicking
click
of pay.
And now coming up, right, before you even know you want that.
Anticipatory shipping.
We're talking, of course, about Amazon.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, they continue to set the bar
now that I work at home,
for data.
I don't
ever
have to leave because of Amazon.
I have every day
Amazon's delivering to my door.
I'm a bit of a mark for Amazon myself. But
that's a new expectation, particularly among millennials who kind of grew up with this. And so there's a couple things. There's the know me, make it relevant, communicate to me in the way I choose to be communicated to, have context, don't waste my time, make me re-explain. But it's having that sort of that engagement and applying that to talent. Like, why can't and why is it that when I walk into a job, I'm treated like sort of cookie cutter?
Yeah.
And it's one size fits all. And that same generation.
Well, that juxtaposition, right? You've been maybe wooed. Maybe
absolutely.
You've had a candidate,
you've
wined and dined, you've really been convinced, a great offer, all this great experience, maybe you've been flown for the interview.
All of a sudden,
like,
those two worlds collide.
Yeah,
you've been handed off
to someone else, and your experience now completely changed. And you touched upon the employee experience earlier, but it's part of that, right?
Right. So you went from sort of user interfaces that needed to be more user-friendly and UI improvements, and that's no longer about UI improvements, it's about user experience, sort of end-to-end, just like consumer experiences. You know, it's about employee experience, or really talent experiences, or from the point you're, and creating that consistent, coherent, you know, not dissonant, if you will, experience from candidate, talent, source to employee, and then even to alumni. You know, some organizations do a really great job with their alumni and keeping them engaged and in play. So there's a there's a real opportunity there.
So I'm glad you said engage, because I was thinking, I mean, that's just it. You want to stay in contact with them, whether, you know, if you're still there,
right,
if you're not there, because it is that personal experience.
Right, and they may come back, and they may,
yeah,
you know, contribute in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah.
The other thing about the millennials, I mean, you know, you mentioned you have kids, I do as well, and they want to customize everything. And now you can go on a website and actually, you know, customize shoes. I can order,
yeah,
shoes online. I go, you know, I'm,
yeah,
one of the major manufacturers, and I can click literally the colors, the type, the exact configuration, and within a couple of weeks I get my custom,
mm-hmm,
shoe. Then you get into a job, and it's like, no, you get, you know, standard equipment, and you,
yeah,
don't get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, organizations increasingly are responding to that. They're trying to create a BYOD. They're trying to bring in sort of make it your own, you know,
right,
components. I think you're going to see more of that.
Yeah, I love that. And this is a big sort of thing that maybe way too, I'm oversimplifying how complex it would be, particularly in a larger organization. But when you were talking about the other day, you were talking about the bike example, the custom bike,
sure,
and the custom shoes, and I'm thinking, well, wouldn't that be great if you could sit down at a corporate website, a corporate opportunity site,
yeah, and
right,
say custom job.
Right.
Right.
And, well,
yeah,
I know how to do this. I like to do this.
Yeah.
I'd love to learn this.
Right.
And these are the kind of people,
right,
I'd like to work with.
Right.
That's a huge
thing. It's like
right,
a role builder.
There's a moonshot,
concept.
Right?
Exactly.
But,
right.
But, and to try to fit, say, well, this organization might be a fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, to be back to say, well,
yeah,
we have opportunities in these areas. We don't really do that, right?
Right.
But so you understand that. I mean, I wrote recently about the New York Times piece. You know, you caught the story at the end of the year. It was the most clicked on piece of content on NewYorkTimes.com for all of 2013 was the thing that came out at the end of the year, very end of the year, and it's still 9 days it was out. It was the number one piece of content in 2013. It was the dialect quiz. I don't know if you saw this on NewYorkTimes.com, but it's essentially the quiz is, do you say tennis shoes or sneakers?
Right, right,
you
right,
say
right, right.
You
where
or
you're from,
you
where you're from.
Exactly.
From dialect,
and it tells,
yeah,
you who
good,
you're most,
yeah,
like,
yes,
right? You answer,
yes,
the 20 questions. Anyway, the story behind how that piece of content came to be and exists on New York Times, and I wrote about this on Fistful of Talent, is completely a metaphor for sort of modern talent management and almost customization. Like, New York Times found that guy, like they found that research which he had already started on some college website. They brought him in for an internship, and they created a role for him, and then they supported him in that research,
mm-hmm,
and then helped him, of course, with their technology, their expertise, of course, their platform, to enable that dialect map to become, you know, a multi-million page view kind,
sure,
of juggernaut. Now,
sure,
the guy works for them. He's a full-time job there, and he works for,
right,
them,
right,
engaged in producing this kind of content. So it's fascinating, and it's kind of a modern kind of take on talent management, which is not traditionally, you know, what we've seen before. So I love that story.
Sure. Well, one thing that's for sure is that, you know, that we've just seen the pace, just a continued acceleration,
yeah,
in terms of, you know, where things are going. So it's exciting.
Cool. So I think, Trish, we probably should wrap up, let Bertrand get back to his busy schedule here at Oracle HCM, which is not over yet.
No.
I know you can't talk specifically, but we are about an hour from a huge event here.
Oh, yeah.
For
really
HR and for,
yeah,
Oracle, for our community, of course, which is Oracle CEO Larry Ellison's coming to HCM World to give the closing keynote address, which is going to start in about an hour or so. So we're excited
about
that.
Which means you have now presented.
So Larry and I have presented. That was my joke.
Yeah,
same
day.
Larry and I presented at the first,
yeah,
Oracle HCM World, which,
okay,
I'll talk about forever now. So,
right.
But so did Bertrand, and
yeah,
of course, and we're so pleased, Bertrand, that you took some time to sit with us today out of your schedule.
Well, it's great to be here.
Share some of your thoughts on these big HR bets and the HR moonshot. So thank you. Of course, thank everyone else on the Oracle team. She's sitting here and I don't want to embarrass her, so I just want to thank the person who helped set this up. She's been fantastic. And everybody at Oracle HCM for having me here, having Trish here, allowing us the opportunity to do the show. So last thoughts, last words, anything you want to send the HR Happy Hour folks off with? Download us on iTunes,
yeah,
search HR
download
Happy
it.
Hour, Android
Share
device.
It.
You have the Android device. Do you know what you do if you have the Android device, Trish?
Then
I'll tell you.
Take it an iPhone.
No, here's
okay.
What you do. You download an app called Stitcher Radio, and search
there
for HR Happy Hour.
And there we are.
And we're on your Android device as well. And so, of course, then we'll see you next time. We'll be back soon with another HR Happy Hour show and podcast. Thanks, Bertrand. Thanks, Trish. We'll see you next time from the HR Happy Hour show.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.